ανάμεσα στον Αλμπουκάλακο. Τη Λέιντι με τον Αλμπουκτό Λάσσε. Τη Gentleman with a beautiful hairstyle is Honorable Teddy. And myself is Humphrey McCaughan. It's a six-member panel representing the committee. Obviously, we'll report back when we're done. You'll introduce yourself and tell us, as my first question, and will tell us about your qualifications and their relevance to the post that you have applied for, as well as your experience, but also related to the post that you applied for. We have 45 minutes to engage, and we need to answer, or you need to respond to all questions, or need to ask all questions. So, handling the questions from your side will give you an opportunity to market yourself. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Chairperson Maqegwane. And thank you also to members of the Portfolio Committee. I really appreciate this opportunity, Chairperson. My name is Dimakazo Kocha, and I currently work for an industry body of broadcasters called the National Association of Broadcasters. I possess a legal background. I've got an LLB degree, and which I obtained in 2000, in the year 2000. And in 2001, basically, my career started when I started working for an entity called the Road Accident Fund. I worked there as a claims handler. But with the view to expand my horizon, I then moved on to the Department of Trade and Industry. I worked at CIPRO. It was CIPRO then. It's now CIPS. And I worked for the Trademark Division as a trademark administrator. But within a year, Chairperson, I realized that I was not growing enough within that environment. And I think relevant to this position, then that's when my career as a policy and regulatory analyst or specialist started, because then I went and joined Centec, the signal distributor. At Centec, I worked as a policy and regulatory licensing specialist. And Chair, my joining Centec at that time was very critical and I think very momentous in the ICT sector, Chair, because that was a time when the Convergence Bill was being debated in Parliament. And in a way, Chair, I sort of hit the ground running, because with no experience at all in policy and regulatory in broadcasting, I was able to navigate myself through that process. And at that time as well, the CASA Act was also being amended in order to align it to the converged environment. So, Chair, my work experience at Centec spent over a period of 3 years. And around about 2007, the then executive chairperson of the National Association of Broadcasters approached me with the view that the organization is looking to look for a successor for the then executive director. And then they approached me. And at the NAB, Chair, what I did basically was around where I am currently working as well, is I am responsible for policy and regulatory analysis. I also do legal advice for the entity. The entity is an entity, it's a member association for broadcasters. We represent the SABC as the public service broadcaster. We've got ETV as our member, MultiChoice, and all the commercial radio stations, and some community radio stations as our members. So I've been working there at the NAB for almost 9 years now, Chair. And just to point out that in 2006, I then got admitted as an advocate by virtue of being a fit and proper person. but I never served my pupillage. By then I did get an admission. So, Chair, I think relevant to this role, I think my qualification, basically, I think when you look at the, I think the CASA Act, it does stipulate the caliber of people that should do qualify to become appointed as counsellors. And I believe that by virtue of me having a legal degree, but also having the relevant experience within the sector, Chair, I believe that I am properly qualified. I'm possessing more than 10 years of experience in the ICTs, both policy and, I mean, both broadcasting and telecommunications, because having worked at Centec, I had an experience into the signal distribution and the telecoms aspect of ICTs. And now at the NAB, I am working predominantly with broadcasting-related policy and regulatory affairs. I have participated in a number of parliamentary oral hearings presentations. I have also participated in a lot of regulatory processes that the authority, CASA, has undertaken. And as a result, Chair, I do believe that I am in a position to be considered. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Tsedi. Good day. Is it acceptable to call you Dimakat?
Yes, Mr. Tsedi, okay. It is acceptable. Thank
okay.
you.
No.
Chairperson, on a point of order. Can we address in accordance with the rules, format all the time?
No,
we're still in parliament.
I was checking with the candidates.
With the rules, we must check with the rules.
Are you not able to say Ms. Kosha? Kosha. Good day, Ms. Kosha. Oh, that's the problem. Eh? Oh, okay. My two questions. The first one relates to the Broadcasting Act number 4 of 1999. And I want you to share with the panel your understanding of the Act, and in the process tell us which Act did this Act repeal, the weaknesses of the previous one, and the weaknesses of this Act that I'm talking about. And I'm raising this thing in relation to the Companies Act, the one that was enacted in 2011. That's the first question. Here's two questions to ask. Is it fine? Are you okay to respond to this one first and then come back?
Chair, it's fine. I will respond to the first question and then I will take the second question. Thank you very much, Honorable Tsedi. Basically, at its inception, I think of let's say 1994, post the apartheid regime, there was what was called the IBA Act, the Independent Broadcasting Act. And I think it ran parallel with the Telecommunications Act then. But with convergence, as I said, there was then a need for what is now called the Electronic Communications Act. And the Electronic Communications Act is an amalgamation of both the Telecoms and the IBA Act. So both acts were repealed in total when the ECA was enacted. With regards to the Broadcasting Act, there was a level of some amendments that took place when the ECA was passed into law. And I think when you look, I think for me, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Tsedi, the weaknesses that one does see in terms of the Broadcasting Act is the fact that, in fact, there is no correlation. When you look at Chapter 9 of the ECA, which specifically speaks to the Broadcasting Act, there is a lot of disjuncture. There is a licensing framework that has been outlined by the ECA, but you don't see that licensing framework being carried over into the Broadcasting Act. But I think, tied to your question about the Companies Act, in terms of the Broadcasting Act, I think the SCDC is actually incorporated in terms of the Broadcasting Act, but I think also there has always been debate as to whether falling under the, governed by the Broadcasting Act in terms of corporate governance, or is it in terms of the Companies Act? I think, Chair, that's quite subject to interpretation. But also when you look at it from my point of view, the weaknesses that I think lie with the Broadcasting Act is the fact that it predominantly deals with the SABC. And as a result, I think critics would tell you that it was actually even much better to even refer to it as a broadcasting, as the SABC Act, because it predominantly deals with the SABC, because it speaks about the board, it speaks about the charter, and so forth and so on. So I think the criticism that I would venture at the Broadcasting Act, Chair, would be the fact that it seems more like the SABC Act more than any other thing, because all the other services, your free-to-air commercial services, are governed by the Electronic Communications Act.
The last one. What are the functions and responsibilities of the regulator, ICASA in this instance, to the Telecommunications and Postal Services Act sector, as per the Postal Services Act and the Electronic Communications Act?
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. The functions, or the key role of those of the regulator of the ICASA, is to regulate broadcasting, telecoms, as well as postal services independently in the interest of the public, in the public interest. So my view is the fact that ICASA should be seen to be operating independently without any bias. But in so doing, ICASA is responsible for the licensing of broadcasting services, the licensing of telecoms services, as well as postal services. Another role that I think is very critical as far as authority is concerned is the regulation of spectrum, because we know that spectrum is a scarce resource and it needs to be regulated and managed efficiently. So I think in as far as spectrum is concerned, it's the critical role that the authority should be playing. But also, having licensed these services, I believe one other role that ICASA plays is that of monitoring and compliance. Because, Chair, it's one thing to license, but it's another to monitor and ensure that there is compliance with the license conditions. So with regards to the ECA, I think the role that the regulator plays is ensuring, well, of course, a licensing of these services, the electronic communications services, as well as the ECSs, as well as broadcasting services. So the roles of ICASA then are carried over into the ECA in terms of how it should license, but also in terms of whether or not ICASA should be complying with policy directives that emanate from government or from the Department of Telecoms or Broadcasting, as it were. I think, Chair, I have answered that question.
Thank you very much. Honorable Tolasha.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good afternoon, Advocate. My question would be, in fact, if I can background of the fact that the ICASA is accountable to Parliament. I'm sure you know that. As its funding is approved by Parliament and it has to report to the legislature annually on the implementation of programs and expenditure of funds in terms of Section 15 of the ICASA Act. However, several sections of the founding legislation, for instance, the ICASA Act as amended, appear to strengthen the Minister of Communications' role against that of the National Assembly. In addition, Section 6A introduces performance management systems for councillors. Now, the Independent Communication Authority of South Africa, Act 13 of 2002, in particular Section 6A, makes provision that the Minister of Communication, in consultation with the National Assembly, established a performance management system to monitor and evaluate the performance of the chairperson and other councillors. Do you think that this would pose any significant challenge to the independence of ICASA, given that councillors are answerable to to the minister but not parliament.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dolashe, for that question. I think in as far as whether or not the independence of ICASA is compromised by having to report to the minister, I don't think the independence is in any way compromised. The reason being, Chair, that funding, because I think when you look at how you determine or how do you identify whether an entity is independent or not, you look at where it gets its funding from. You also look at whether is there a separation of powers, and the fact that the appointments of the councillors are by parliament already shows that there is a level of independence. But I think, Chairperson, councillors do need to be made to account, and as a result I believe that it is a good move that they should be put through a performance system which should be managed by the minister. But in as far as the compromise of independence, I don't think there is at all any compromise.
Thank you, Advocate. The last one. What advantages and disadvantages does mobile broadband bring about? In your answer, we would like to compare and contrast mobile versus fixed broadband rollout and qualify your choice and advise why the rest of the country should be bought into your choice.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dolashe. So I think members are aware that there is a white paper that has just come out, which has been published by the Department of Telecoms and Postal Services. Basically, I think this policy document lays the foundation in terms of how going forward, spectrum and issues of fixed and mobile and fixed services should be dealt with. In my view, I think that mobile is more preferred, mainly because it has got its capabilities that enable mobility, while fixed on the other hand is more like an antiquated system. It's more old vis-a-vis mobile. And I think one thing, Chair, that I would like to bring to attention of the committee is also the fact that when you look at what the white paper is doing, is also trying to introduce open access, because I think tied to mobility and whether it's fixed, I think there is also a need to assess whether is a necessity for us to be going open access in as far as spectrum allocation is concerned. So those are the considerations that I think the policymakers should be taking into account when determining whether mobile is a preferred way of doing things. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Fanda.
Thank you, Advocate. I'm sure you're aware of Section 6 of the ICASA Act, which precludes certain categories of people from serving on the ICASA Council. And one of those categories is people who have family members, business partners, associates, we have financial, direct or indirect financial interests in the broadcasting and telecommunications sector. Do you have any such people in your life?
Oh, okay. So myself, Chairperson, I'm currently working in the broadcasting environment, but should it happen that I get appointed, obviously I will be resigning from that role. But from my, okay, I am getting there. Okay. Yeah, so from the background, family background and so forth, I do not have anybody who is involved in the broadcasting environment. Nor do I have, any acquaintances, except for colleagues that are in the sector. It seems like I haven't answered you properly. Except for colleagues that I'm currently working with, but in as far as family connections or family contacts are concerned, who are involved in the broadcasting sector are concerned, I do not have that.
you work at the National Association of Broadcasters, am I correct? It's not a state entity. You can just nod off.
It is not an SOE. It is an industry body. It's a voluntary entity established by broadcasters. It serves the interests of broadcasters. So it's a membership association of broadcasters. It's a voluntary entity funded solely by the broadcasters.
Yeah. But I don't think that would... Why would you resign from that if you were appointed to the ICASA Council? Because the only people that aren't allowed to serve on the ICASA Council is public servants or anyone who receives a salary from the state. So why would you feel the need to resign from the NAB?
Because through you, Chair, the ICASA Council role is a full-time position. So I would not be able to be serving two organizations at the same time. Thank you.
Maybe whilst waiting, can I talk about my, or can I raise my question, the second one? It's related to NCC, the National Consumer Council, Competitions Commission, and Complaints Compliance Commission. And maybe the question is, if you can give us the difference between their functions, or the parallels, if you like, as well as three of them complementing each other in regulating the IC sector, if they do complement each other. So if you can just outline the function difference between the three. So the question is in two parts. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. These three entities, Chair, one thing that they've got in common is that they're all statutory bodies. The NCC is a product of the National Consumer Protection Act. And it is responsible for handling consumer complaints. But when you look at the Enabling Act, it cuts across all sectors, it cuts across all platforms, and as a result, there is a requirement within the Enabling Act that any entity that seems to be that already has its own code of conduct can then be exempted from the application of the NCC. That's enough about the NCC. And then the Competition Commission, as I said, also it's also a statutory body. It is responsible for handling complaints. And competition complaints, yet again across all spectrum. While the NCC the CCC of ICASA is solely responsible for the handling of complaints that relate to the violation of license conditions, the violation of the Electronic Communications Act, as well as the violations of the ICASA Act. But you are correct, Chair, there is potentially an overlap, or what they call concurrent jurisdiction, across all three platforms, or across all three entities, mainly because they are quasi-judicial bodies. So what ICASA has done with the NCC as well as the Competition Commission is they have entered into MOUs to address areas of overlap. So they've agreed that in an event that there is a complaint that should be falls within the jurisdiction of the CCC, and is tabled before the NCC, then such a complaint shall be referred to the CCC, and vice versa. So I think that's a workable mechanism that has been found in terms of how these three entities can work together and avoid people forum shopping, because people sometimes tend to go to a place where they think that their complaint will be better dealt with. So those MOUs then deal with such a confusion and a forum shopping possibilities.
Any further questions? No, he doesn't.
Chair, fortunately not. Thank you.
We're just waiting for your questions, Honorable Kalako.
Oh.
And Honorable Loss.
In view of the criticisms to ICASA as a regulator, that it allows itself to be controlled by the industry. What is your take or opinion on that? And also on the relationship between the entity and the car, and entities falling under communication. Meaning ICASA or SABC does participate when there's a development of policy within the department. But at the same time, ICASA has to regulate SABC. And the complaint that other broadcasters are saying on the SABC that there's an advantage because ICASA recites and reports to the same ministry together with. Do you think that arrangement is not completing its role? So just those two questions.
Those are your questions, Honorable.
Those are my questions.
Okay. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kalako, for the question. Is ICASA weak or not? I think, Honorable Kalako, it's a very subjective question, and I think it's got very many answers to it because an entity is strengthened or weakened by the people because entities are made up of people. So whether or not it's weak, and I think what will weaken it is if sector poaches, because what we've seen over the years is the authority will train people. They will have the best qualifications, I mean, best qualified people and train them. But then what happens? The sector snatches them. So I think basically the very regulated sector is the one that, in a way, indirectly weakens the authority because then they snatch qualified and experienced employees from the regulator. As a result, then that deals with, or even, I mean, hampers the capacity issues within the regulator. Whether or not industry does control, I really do not have a view on this one. But I think also, as I said, it also depends on from which side you're looking at it, because honorable members will realize and recall that the sector is regulated and it's governed by license conditions. So what the authority does, or what the authority should be doing, is to ensure that the licensees are complying with license obligations. They should ensure that they create an enabling environment in which licensees should be able to operate. So So I think in as far as control is concerned, I think it still yet goes back to the issue of the people, where the people are open to control or not. But I think governance issues are strengthened within the authority, then I think there shouldn't be any loopholes in terms of any kind of control that the industry should control the regulator. About the SCBC and ICASA, Honourable Chair and Honourable Member, I think the relationship is as good as the SCBC is a licensee, ICASA is the regulator. And that's the kind of relationship that should exist between the SCBC and the regulator. Because in as much as they do report to a single government department, but the level of relationship that they have is that the SCBC is a licensee and is accountable to ICASA in terms of complying with license conditions. As to who the shareholder is, I don't think that's relevant. What is important is that the relationship between the SCBC and ICASA is governed by the fact that ICASA has licensed the SCBC. And I think in terms of whether or not the SCBC should be participating in public processes, the SCBC is equally affected by the outcome of the policies and the regulations that come out of ICASA as well as out of Parliament. So I think it is only fair for the SCBC to be allowed or even to be seen to be participating in these public processes, because the policies and the regulations, when they come out, they apply equally to commercial, the public broadcaster, as well as all the other tiers of broadcasters. So I think that the SCBC should also be allowed to participate in these processes, because they will also be bound by the outcome of the processes.
All right, Honourable Ndlozi, can you ask your question?
Thank you, Chair. I want to apologize to the member first. We have this thing of having to go and vote all the time. I'm not sure if the chairperson would have briefed you, but that's why I had to run out to go and stop the idea that we shouldn't repeal all apartheid laws. But I was too late, and therefore apartheid laws stay. My question is really about the capacity of ICASA. There's a criticism out there that ICASA has lacks capacity, susceptible to the market or to the industry, it's often too weak. I want you to express your view in relation to that. And let me caution you, you are looking to be in the board. What this question also should have us see is that you understand power, because that's what that entity is about. It's about regulation in an environment where there are actual seriously powerful players that are about power. So in relation to the weaknesses that ICASA has pointed out to, as well as its susceptibility to the industry, what is your view? One, multi-choice as a monopoly within the pay industry. How would you deal with that? Secondly, ANN7. There are many people who say ANN7 is basically in a situation where NSPAS was in relation to the citizen under apartheid, that it's actually owned by a corrupt family to push its propaganda, so which is why NSPAS, for an example, apologized later on. So as a regulator who must regulate, what would you do with that? People are saying actually its license should be revoked because there's conclusive evidence to that effect. What is your view? But remember that that is in relation to this perceived weakness on the part of ICASA. And I want to emphasize a clear example in the past is pay TV multi-choice. A clear example moving forward is a licensee that is clearly in corrupt hands, as it were. If you can't stomach ANN7 example, something like the citizen under NSPAS in apartheid. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Ndlozi. And I think I don't know whether it's the fortunate, and actually I want to say it's the unfortunate position in which the regulator as well as the policymaker finds themselves in, is the fact that technology advances very quickly. And by the time the policymaker or even the regulator tries to wake up, technology has already taken place. And I think to the point that as a result, there is a perception that there is a capture of the industry. I think it's one that goes back to the pure point of saying that the authority needs to be strengthened, mainly through skills, through the relevant skills, technical policy, I mean policy skills, as well as legal skills, because those are the skills that are required in order, well, some of the skill sets that are required in order for the authority to be strengthened, that it can withstand any form of bias or, you know, manipulation from outside. So coming back to the issue of technology having, I mean, advancing quicker than policy and regulations, it's unfortunate that NSPRS or Multishares or even MNET found themselves in a position they were in when they were able to enter the market when there was a regulatory vacuum. Yet again, there was a regulatory vacuum when the pay TV market entered into the country. And by the time the policy and regulation caught up, Multishares had already taken up the market. But I think one thing that is required, and I think with the one thing that the authority has tried to do over the past years, was to try to license other pay TV players. But we have seen their failure, and we need to find out what has perpetuated this failure. Why is it that these markets are failing? And that's one thing that the authority, in fact, if I were to get into that board, as you're saying, Honorable Ngozi, then would be to find out what is perpetuating the failures, the market failures, where there is perception of monopoly. And I don't want to speak particularly about, you know, licenses to say NN70, but I want to speak about principles to say. Principles that govern this environment is one, licensing. And when licensing takes place, it's a very robust process. It's a beauty contest. It's a process where the authority, you know, brings all the potential applicants or the applicants who come before the authority to present what is it that they're capable of providing. And I think the authority can only take a decision based on the information that's presented to them. And I do believe, Honorable Ndlozi, that there should be an opportunity in the event that other facts emerge afterwards, after the fact, after licensing has taken place, then indeed that review should be taken, should be conducted to see or ascertain whether or not such licensees should still retain the licenses. And I think that is the most important role in terms of monitoring that the authority should be playing, to ascertain whether other players still who they are when they applied. Because others, you know, there are certain elements that do change. In fact, things like ownership, things like BEE ownership, which change as the processes go. So in order to avoid such instances where there are doubts or where there are uncertainties, the authority should actually be conducting regular reviews in order to ascertain that the people who came to apply initially are still the same people who are still operating later on. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, and then my final question relates to where do you think ICASA should report? A lot of people, I know you are looking for a position in the board, you might not want to upset powers, but that might actually tell us a lot as well. So feel free to answer the way you want. Some people, I mean, there are obviously initiatives of two regulators, but my specific focus here is where should ICASA report, telecommunications or communications?
Chairperson, I think ICASA finds itself in a very awkward position, mainly because it regulates both telecoms and broadcasting. And telecoms and broadcasting belong to different government departments. And as a result, it's a very awkward position, and I think the only best way to deal with it would be the enactment of new legislation. And I think that's what the white paper is seeking to do. And some kind of an interim arrangement was done when the president actually passed the proclamation to state which aspects of the authority will fall under comms and which aspects of the authority will fall under telecoms, mainly because there is that overlap. But I think one neat and clean way of dealing with the chair is to would be to enact legislation that is specific to say this is where telecoms or where ICASA should be falling. But in as long as we still have in two government departments and we still have ICASA responsible for telecoms as well as the licensing of telecoms, the licensing of broadcasting services, we are potentially still going to sit with the same problem of not knowing exactly where the regulator should fall. But I think, Chair, you will also realize in terms of the white paper, there is a move to actually split the regulator, and I think it's basically in order to follow the course, to follow the status quo, to say that we're having two government departments, let's rather maybe then split the authority. But one elephant in the room, Chair, is the fact that the authority is an independent regulator. In terms of 192 of the Constitution, it's supposed to be seen as an independent regulator, which is responsible for the regulation of broadcasting services. So when we are now splitting ICASA and saying you shall be responsible for content and the new regulator shall be an economic regulator, will be responsible for spectrum and so forth, where does 192 lie? And I think that's a very, very critical question, Chair, that still needs to be answered in terms of how do we deal with 192. In fact, Honorable Ndozi, the most important thing, or even the critical question for me, is not where should ICASA be, but how do we interpret 192 in order for us to ensure the independence of the regulator, which is the distinguishing factor in as far as ICASA is concerned.
Thank you very much. I think we are done, members, and we are pressurized by international relations. Thanks, Edmund Kod. Kucha. Yes. Thank you very much, Kucha. I've been saying Kosha. Members will have to learn. We'll have to break now and go back to 475 for the last candidate. All these people and they have visitors from abroad. Thank you very much, ma'am. If you want to say anything, you are free to do so.